Welcome. Jim Manzi joins us today. He's the founder and chairman of Applied Predictive Technologies, a business analytics firm. His 2012 book is titled Uncontrolled: The Surprising Payoff of Trial and Error for Business, Politics, and Society. The book argues for the usefulness of experimental methods, in other words, randomized control trials, for addressing important policy issues. In a review of Uncontrolled for the New York Times, columnist David Brooks writes that, quote, Manzi wants to infuse government with a culture of experimentation, unquote. I'm very glad to have Jim Manzi join us by phone today from London. Jim, start us off, if you would, by describing, as you do in your book, how many innovative businesses today are using randomization and testing to guide their strategy. To quote David Brooks again, he said, this is how businesses learn.
Sure. A good and well-known example is the credit card company Capital One, which was founded with the specific intention of turning the credit card business into a long series of structured randomized experiments to determine consumer reaction in a competitively superior way. And Capital One today is running tens of thousands of structured experiments per year, testing everything from should the credit card offer in direct mail come in a red envelope or a blue envelope? Should it have the following terms versus alternative terms? Testing internal processes, training, and so on. There are also a number of large retailers, some of whom are using our software technology, that have been widely written up in the business press for doing really extensive experimentation. Staples, the office supply company, is a very good example of that. Something like a third of all the large retailers, hotel chains, restaurant chains, et cetera, in the U.S. at least, have implemented our testing software, and therefore this is pretty well penetrated.
I'd like to take a minute, Jim, and explain a bit more about what a randomized control trial is, just to make sure that all of our listeners are up to speed. We use the term RCT, randomized control trial. It's also called the experimental method. It could also be called a random assignment evaluation. Tell us how you describe the fundamentals of the concept.
A simple way to think of a randomized control trial is a fair test or a fair trial in which you're trying to avoid the problem that you have differences in the people who get some treatment or program as compared to the group who did not get it. And you want to be sure that you're isolating only the causal effect of the program and not getting all mixed up with differences in the kinds of people who participate in the program versus do not. And randomization is simply one thing you do to be sure as you can, and you can never be absolutely sure, but as sure as you can that the groups are alike in all possible respects.
So with that quick detour through statistics, I'd like to ask you now, Jim, about applications and how you think of the different buckets or categories for rapid innovation and testing. One obvious application is websites. If a public agency wants to implement, say, a customer service improvement on their webpage, they could have a splitter and track one group of website users that got this innovation or process improvement compared to another one and see if outcomes differ.
So what I'd say is that in business, certainly, you can think of two kinds of channels of distribution. One are direct distribution channels. These are things like email, websites, phone, direct mail. Essentially, these are ways of interaction, means of interaction between the company and consumers in which there is no distribution system. It's simply direct. On the other kind of distribution channel is some sort of physical or other structured distribution channel. So think of this as, you know, stores, bank branches, ATMs, a territory sales force, et cetera. And the first of those two channels are the first kind of area of application you described. And in fact, those are the first kinds of channels this sort of experimentation was applied to in business. And the reason is slightly nerdy, which is it's very easy to get large sample sizes for the experiments. So if I'm, for example, running a website and I want to know, does the following color create on background create greater click-through than this alternative color, it's very easy to randomly assign 50,000 arriving use sessions to the screen with one color and 50,000 randomly assign use sessions to alternative color and simply measure click-through. If I'm in a physical distribution channel, I can't typically pick 50,000 randomly chosen stores. As my test group, I can pick 50 or 27 or 104 or 18. And I actually think the core of the application of randomized trials into public policy settings are in fact in that latter topic. Because if you think about analogies of business tests to public policy tests, the business test might be, I run 10,000 stores. I want to test whether this new store manager training program really does increase store sales. I think analogizes to, I've got a new training program for probation officers. Does it in fact, or does it not, reduce recidivism? I have a new Salesforce incentive schedule. Does it increase net sales for my across my 1,000 salespeople? I want to run that as test of a subset of salespeople. That's like, does my new universal benefit for welfare recipients decrease long-term unemployment, and so on and so on. And I think in general, because it's easier to apply it in those kinds of web settings and so on, that's where a lot of it to date has happened. But I think the core of really changing public policy in the center of gravity where money gets spent and policies get, you know, win or lose, I think is going to require executing them into, you know, networks of welfare offices, criminal jurisdictions, large school systems, et cetera.
As you know, Jim, in government and in society, we hold up, rightly and understandably, the value that everyone is treated equally by the government. But taken too far, that can be constraining to innovation. For example, if you spend 2 hours in the Department of Motor Vehicles and you're upset by that, you're unlikely to leave the DMV and say, well, at least everyone spend at least 2 hours there. No, you want better customer service. So it seems like to create the kind of culture of innovation that you're speaking of, we in the public sector need to carve out some opportunities for innovation in ways that still have parameters in which we make sure people are treated fairly, but allow public managers and leaders some flexibility to try and do things better.
I certainly agree with that perspective. And you can think of that allowing for flexibility in two stages. There's simply allowing there to be experiments in which some difference in treatment or policy is applied to some people or jurisdictions rather than others. And then beyond the experimental phase, flexibility in allowing different policies to apply in different places. And I think the logic for it and the method is a little bit different in those two phases. I think that there is always, with virtually all human beings, resistance to being, which is natural and understandable, the subject. No one wants to be the subject of an experiment, typically. All of those ethical issues, you know, have really been hashed through, I think, quite thoroughly for medical trials, and we do 10,000 or more of them a year. And I think when you really work through the logic, you end up in the test phase premising why you would do these experiments on your ignorance. In other words, if you were absolutely sure you knew already that the current best standard of care was actually better than the experimental treatment, or you just knew without running the test that this new medical therapy is better, then you have no ethical justification for running the test. But the fact is, we don't. And we need to run these tests to have at least a better idea. We never have perfect knowledge, a better idea of whether the therapy is effective or not.
A final point from your book, Jim, that I wanted to touch on is that to create a culture of innovation, whether in business or in government, you need to be willing to fail sometimes. That when you're doing legitimate experiments, where you don't know the outcome in advance, even if you have a strong logic model and a lot of hope that something will work, often things won't work. And you need to have some tolerance in the system for that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, to push that point even further, what I'd say is the vast majority of things we try will fail. Across a very large number of commercial experiments, both in, run through my company software and as published by Google and Microsoft and others for their experiments, you know, 80 to 90% of new business programs that are tested in well-structured experiments fail to create statistically significant improvement with costs greater than benefits. My review that I went through in the book of in which I attempted to review every well-structured, large-scale, developed world randomized field trial ever done in social science, is that the failure rate is at least as high, that the percentage of government policy programs that can be shown in replicated, well-structured, randomized trials to create statistically significant improvement is under 10% of those attempted. So in fact, we should not view this as, well, I've got to get my RCT for my program to prove it works, but we should be radically ramping up the number of trials because most things we try aren't going to work.
The book is titled Uncontrolled. Jim Manzi, thanks for being with us today and for sharing your insights.
Thanks very much.